Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome to episode 277 of Amazon Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazon Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore, and thank you for joining us today. When we last spoke, the Mets had won 8 games in a row. The following 6 games have not gone quite as well, but it's still been a pretty fun start to the season. I'm joined this week by Allison McCaig, and we're going to talk about the last 6 games and sort of some bigger questions for the Mets. We're going to play a game of Would You Rather, and we're going to have a special guest appearance from Chris McShane at the end of the show. So stay tuned. Well, Allison, the last time we had a podcast, the Mets had just won 8 straight. The subsequent 6 games have not been quite as good. The Mets went 3-3 in those 6 games, but tonight came back from a big deficit against the Nationals with a 9-run 8th inning, kept off by Yoenis Cespedes' grand slam. It was pretty special, pretty fun inning to watch, especially after watching the horrible, horrible 8th inning from Monday night. So, just sort of generally overall, what is your opinion of the last 6 games, and how do you feel going into Atlanta tomorrow?
So, I think that, you know, I wrote a piece on Amazon Avenue about not overreacting to one game after the really horrible game we had in the National Series when DeGrom pitched and we were up 6-1 and then we didn't win. I think that obviously we were not going to win every game forever. and I think that some things have revealed themselves and the Mets have come back down to earth a little bit, but I still feel good about this team. And I think tonight helped a lot. I think that if tonight had been the 4-2 loss that we were like expecting and ready for, I think that my answer to this question might have been a little different. But I think that despite the fact that some things have been exposed as not perfect about this team, I think that they're still a good team. And a stretch where they haven't played quite as great as they started off at doesn't change that.
Yeah. You know, the rational part of me says, well, if you can't be that upset over the 6-run eighth on Monday, you can't be that excited about the 9-run eighth on Wednesday, right? They're both like one inning random occurrences. But yes, I will also say that that 6-run inning on Monday felt like this is something that could only happen once or twice this season. You're not going to see this many pitchers not be able to deliver in this particular order in this time. This 9-run right. inning seems like something that could happen more than once.
Yeah, I think it could, especially against, you know, pitchers like A.J. Cole, who Yoenis Cespedes should own like that. I'm
Absolutely.
Hoping that if we see, you know, and then the Nationals' bullpen is better than most bullpens we will see this year, most likely. So I'm hoping that against, you know, less quality pitching, we will see more big innings like that. Our offense should be able to produce big innings like that.
Right. And, you know, you can look at it one of two ways. Like, if you eliminated either of the big innings, it would have been the same series. Like, the
sure.
Mets would have won Monday and lost tonight. So it's not like either big inning was totally threw the series into a different direction. But, you know, the dreamer in me says, well, if they had just gotten out of that eighth inning giving up 4 runs instead of 6 runs, we might mm-hmm. be sitting here right now talking about the Mets taking 2 of 3 from Washington at home, and that, again, changes the conversation. But it doesn't change it that much. They're still 13-4.
They're still 13-4.
Yeah, they're still playing, you know, above-average baseball. I have SNY on in the background, and just that grand slam was just, I mean, a laser beam.
I'm going to have to listen to the Gary, Keith, and Ron call on that, because I have the unfortunate distinction of having to listen to Masson for the Nationals games, because I live in Baltimore, as our listeners probably know. And so I have to listen to the Nationals announcers for these games. And most of the time it's excruciatingly painful. But when the Mets when the Mets put together an inning like that, though, it's very nice, because even though I don't get the like super excited gare, like, home run call, I do get stunned silence, which is awesome.
yes it is. The other thing that I think might be playing a little bit into this this week of Mets games is that they've had to do a lot with a brand new catcher in Jose Lobaton. You know, Tomas Nito was seemed to be in major league games more over. Sorry, not major league games, big league camp games more in spring training than Lobaton was. I didn't see a lot of Lobaton in spring training, and I think, you know, obviously offensively he has not been great. He started off with a triple. A little bit hard to live up to that, and his hair has been fantastic. We've talked a lot in Slack about his like third tier boy band hair.
Oh my god, Lance Bass hair.
Yeah, but I think that Lobaton, for the most part, has been calling a pretty good game, and I think that once the pitching staff gets a little more comfortable with him, you know, you might see a little bit of an improvement, even more so than we've had so far, because obviously it takes a long time for catchers and pitchers to get on the same page. But I really wonder what the Mets' game plan is for catcher long term. You know, not even long term, just short term, as in, you know, when Pilecki comes back, is it going to be Pilecki and Lobaton, Pilecki and Nito? Or, you know, reports are out there that the Mets are still trying to trade for JT Realmuto, which would be great, if unrealistic, perhaps, at this point. So I guess, Allison, if you're Sandy Allison, that's the only thing there. And you can sort of dictate the catching situation for the rest of the season. Where do you kind of put your efforts?
So obviously a lot depends on what kind of package we'd have to give up for Realmuto. I mean, we heard rumors in the off season that the Marlins did not wanted Victor Robles from the Nationals for him. And that is a package that we would have trouble matching without, you know, emptying the farm, or, you know, Brandon Nimmo would be like the starting point.
Right.
And that would be painful, I think. I don't know. I was very firmly, when Pilecki first went down, I was very firmly like, let's not panic. The catching situation will be fine. It'll be okay. We're getting a lot of offensive production. And that was obviously right around the time where we started to not win as much. And so then, like, the flaws started to get exposed. The bottom of the order started to look really awful with the catcher in it that is not hitting. And so now I'm kind of come around a little bit that I think they need to do something. I don't know if they need to do Realmuto, if the package is something that, you know, would be difficult for us to give up. But I think that they could do an in-between thing. I think that they could, rather than shoot for the stars of Realmuto, they could keep talking to the Marlins, by all means, try to get a deal that both sides can agree on. But I think that we can go in between doing nothing and getting Realmuto. I think we could get somebody else that is, you know, cromulent.
Right. You know, the problem is just catcher is the position in all of baseball that seems to me to be the fewest true game-changing players.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's this very thin upper crust of players, and then everybody else kind of just falls into this middle ground. And so I don't want the Mets to give up too much to get somebody who's going to be marginally better than Pilecki.
Sure, sure. And I think that, I mean, I don't know, I agree with you, but I also think that Lobaton is not a major league player.
No, he's not a major league starter.
No, yeah, and I think that, I don't know, like, you can't get nothing at the plate, especially if we're still not controlling the running game. And part of that is on the pitchers, to be sure. It can't all be put on the shoulders of Lobaton and Nito, but early on, and I mean, I think Nito is still way too small sample to say anything about that because he hasn't really played. But Lobaton hasn't really impressed me with his arm, and he's supposed to be the more defensive-minded catcher, even more so than Pilecki and Darnot. So, and I haven't really seen the throwing arm. And controlling the running game has been such a weakness for this team. So if we could get that under control with the more defensive-minded catcher, then I would be more okay with not really getting much at the plate at all. But if we can't do that and we don't get much at the plate, then I don't – then. It's really hard for me to continue. Even if the Lobaton-Nito combo is the backup rather than the starter, it's really hard for me to think that that's what we have to go with, because, like, then we're one more injury away from that being the starting situation again.
Yeah, and that's the hardest part, is just that, you know, if there's... if there's a silver lining to this happening, how can I put this? I'm glad this happened at this point in the year when there are so many options still out there for the Mets, so that they can make a move that doesn't work, if that makes sense. Like, if they make a move in late April, early May that doesn't really work out, that's not going to hamstring them the rest of the season. If this happened in August, there are far less options for them to go with. Then they might have to give up a prospect that they want to hold on to get a catcher who is marginally better than Lobaton because they're in the playoff hunt, hopefully.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Anything else stand out to you from these six games?
I was gonna say before this game that I was slightly concerned about Cespedes, but I maybe have less concerns now
Yeah, you know,
after that Grand Slam.
it's hard to properly gauge Cespedes because he is such a streaky player even when he's healthy. And I don't mean streaky in the way I think most people do. I think Cespedes has a pretty decent baseline, but when he's hot, he is so far and above everybody else that it's that you know, it makes it appear that when he's not hitting a home run every fourth at bat that he's slumping. That's not really the case, but he just goes on these incredible hot streaks. Plus, you know, he was sick. He was in a bit of a slump himself. I had no doubt he would get out of it, but I'm with you. He looked pretty lost at the plate a couple of days ago.
And it what concerned me is that, I mean, it wasn't too much different than other Cespedes slumps we've seen, and he's gotten out of all of them. And I had no concern that he was going to get out of it. I was sure he would get out of it. But what concerned me more about this than previous slumps was his strikeout rate was outrageously high, way higher than at any point that I can remember during other slumps he's had. He was just striking out all the time. And that was concerning to me, is that he wasn't even like recognizing pitches, basically.
And it's especially difficult when you have him batting right in front of Frazier, who also can be a strikeout victim, as last night struck out four times, you know? So I think I definitely agree with you. I think that Cespedes has to feel good about the lineup as it is, with not having to be
The guy.
the guy. But I think that also hurts him because he wants to be the guy. So hopefully he's able to find the balance there. I guess my last question for you is, you know, we're getting every day we're getting more and more data on Mickey Callaway, and we're understanding him a little bit more as a manager. How do you feel about him so far? Because I feel pretty good still. You know, he did that weird pinch hitting for Bruce thing, pinch hitting Bruce when they knew he was going to be intentionally walked in Sunday's game, and you know, I think his bullpen usage on Monday night, I could possibly quibble with using so many pitchers in that one inning. But I think overall he's done remarkably well for a first-time manager, not just because of the record, but because of how players are talking about the team. I think early on in the season, setting a tone is something so important for a manager to do because, you know, early in the season, you're gonna win, you're gonna lose. It's hard to really gauge in-game data. But in terms of gauging his approach to managing the clubhouse, it seems pretty successful so far. What do you think?
I agree with your point that I think he's managing the clubhouse very well. And I mean, part of that, it's hard to, like you said, it's hard to disentangle that from the winning. Obviously, winning is going to make the clubhouse look like they're all getting along and everything's going really great. But I think he has established like an open communication policy with his players that seems to be going pretty well. As far as his in-game managing, I don't I'm it's not a home run. I have some things that I had problems with, especially in the most recent games, but I still think overall I have a positive impression. Mainly my issues were I had two big issues with his like most recent moves. One was when it, like basically over reliance on Jose Reyes and AJ Ramos are my two big
Yes.
things. He seems to start Reyes over Rosario like just to get him going, which is like reminiscent of Terry Collins for me and makes
Yep.
me very nauseous. And pinch hitting him in big spots, and it's just like, oh God. And then also he like when he I, unlike some, I actually agreed with his decision to pull Jacob deGrom in the collapse game. I thought deGrom looked really tired during the Turner at bat, and I thought it was the correct decision to pull him. What I did not agree with was when he put Ramos in. I thought he should have put Familia in at that point instead. But then after the game ended, it was hard for me to stay mad because literally no one did their job in that game. So right. No matter what he did, it seemed like they would have failed anyway. But I do, you know, I do hope that it's not, you know, precedent setting for him to realize that Ramos really isn't the guy you should be using in big spots anymore at this point. Part of that is, of course, you know, exacerbated by the fact that Swarzak is still down and seems like he had a setback today, which we can also talk about.
Yes.
Unfortunately. So that means that there are, you know, more limited options for Callaway to use in big spots. But I would have even gone to Seawald over Ramos at this point.
Yeah, to me, Ramos is a guy you just can't, you can't bring him in with men on base.
Nope, absolutely not.
he has to start the inning clean, for me at least. You know, I didn't necessarily disagree with him pulling DeGrom at the point he pulled him. What I'm not getting from Callaway is he had talked a big game early on in the offseason about not having a closer necessarily. Mm-hmm. And using your best reliever as kind of a stopper instead of as a closer. And so, you know, you never know when you're going to really need that big out. And if that's the case, then I'm with you. When he brought Ramos in on Monday night, he should have brought in Familia. That was...
Right.
You know, if that's the case, then you gotta do that. The Reyes thing... I mean, the conspiracy theorist in me says that the Wilpons have said, like, we're going to keep Reyes in the team all season.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Use him where you can. I hope that's not the case, but that's, you know, I don't put anything past the Wilpons.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No. And, you know, I also wish that Callaway was a little bit more discerning in when he pulls Syndergaard and DeGrom from games, because, mm-hmm. well, I don't, I mean, look, DeGrom looked great on Monday night, and I could understand fans being upset if he didn't start that eighth inning.
Yeah.
But it's early in the season. You don't want to overtax him. You know, let him come out of the game after the seventh inning with the fans upset he didn't get to pitch more instead of having the result that we got. Now, again, I'm playing armchair quarterback. This is not... He didn't make a bad decision, but I think that there was a lot of talk with him about, you know, pulling guys after the first two times through the lineup and all of that. And I just wish maybe he was sticking to those maybe more sabermetrically friendly guns early on in the season than he is. But it's early, and I think he's doing... He's far better than Terry Collins. So
yes, I think he's better than Terry Collins. And my one other small quibble with bullpen usage has been, I think that he is... like using Blevins as a specialist a little too much. I don't like that he keeps putting him in for one batter only. He should let Blevins pitch whole innings sometimes when it's warranted. And I hope that he, you know, expands his usage of him a little more later in the season. Because right now it's just, you know, he's managing every game a little bit like it's the seventh game of the World Series and putting it in Blevins to face Harper and then taking him out immediately. And I just, I don't know if I agree with that. But, you know, it is what it is. I think that, like you said, he's head and shoulders above Terry Collins so far, I think.
Yeah, and he is still also brand new at this. And maybe right. he doesn't have as much confidence in Blevins as a full innings guy than we do, because we saw so many Blevins full innings over the last two seasons that were great. He probably saw considerably fewer of those, so.
Sure.
You did mention Swarzak, who stopped his throwing program today due to discomfort. So I don't know when we're going to get him back. How worried are you about Anthony Swarzak?
As far as like him staying hurt forever, as far as like him being effective when he comes back, or
I think as far as just sort of managing this injury, because an oblique injury is one of those things that can linger forever.
Yep.
And this just seems like the most Mets thing possible.
Yep.
You know,
and like. And he had never been hurt in his career. Right. And he's been hurt twice for the Mets already. And it's just incredible. The two new pitchers are the guys that are hurt. And everyone else is fine.
Yep.
but yeah, I am slightly concerned, but you know, it's still like really the first time he tried to amp it up. And so maybe it was just a little too soon. And if he just dials it back and then, like, you know, tries to go again, it'll be okay. But yet, like you said, obliques are really tricky. You know, especially when you have so, in hitting and pitching, when you have so much torque going on in your core and your body, it's like really a tricky injury to deal with. And there's like not much you can do about it because you're constantly using those muscles, even just like living your life. It's not like an ankle where you can just like stay off it, go on crutches or whatever. It's like you have to use your core to sit up.
Right.
So, right. Yeah. It is concerning, but, you know, it's one setback. I'm hoping, you know, 2 or 3 more weeks. Maybe he'll get throwing again next week and then a couple more weeks after that. Here's hoping.
Yeah, and, you know, it might wind up being somewhat fortuitous that as the rest of the bullpen gets overtaxed in a week or two, he'll be coming in fresh.
Yeah, yeah. That will be helpful. It'll be a huge boon to get him back. To the bullpen. I do like what they're doing, though, as far as keeping guys fresh, of like sending guys down, bringing guys up. That other teams do this all the time, and we just aren't used to seeing it. But the Mets, it's good that the Mets are employing this strategy. And I think that the reason they can employ it is because they finally have enough pitching depth to employ it.
Right.
And enough guys aren't hurt, such that they actually have legitimate options down in AAA, as opposed to last year where they didn't really have anybody in AAA that could throw big league innings. So I think that that's good that they like brought up Gerson Bautista, for example, sent down Robles. I know people were upset about that because Robles was so good after he came back. And people were like, oh, it seems like a punishment to send him down. And I get that, but I also think that it's good that Hansel Robles had been used a lot, and they needed someone fresh after, you know, so many guys throwing so many innings in the infamous game. So
yeah, it's smart. It's a relatively fast and cheap way to solve that problem.
Yep.
So, and without long term impact either.
And I think that, like, you know, the job that Sewald has done in the past week or so has really, really, you know, been helpful in, like, me feeling better about the fact that they can, like, that final spot, they can just, like, shuttle between a couple of guys and have it not be too impactful on the bullpen's ability to get guys out.
Absolutely. And, you know, when Swarzak comes back, he might theoretically take that Bautista Robles spot, and then you have even more depth in AAA.
Exactly. So, you can rotate between Robles, Sewald, Rame, other guys.
The infamous other guys. Yeah.
Other guys.
So the Mets are about to embark on the first real long road trip of the year. They're going down to Atlanta to start. You know, how do you think the Mets... Okay, I asked Chris this question last week, so... We recorded last, we said what would be the Mets, what we think the Mets records was going to be the next time we recorded. And we talked a big game. We went 17-1. And then we eventually walked that back to, I think it was 15-3 was what we had hoped on. Or 14-3, whatever it was. But after, let's just talk about Atlanta for now. What do you hope the Mets, I mean, obviously we hope the Mets sweep in Atlanta. But realistically, what do you think the Mets can do in Atlanta this weekend over the 4 games to put them for next week? What do you think? Does 3 wins sound overly optimistic?
No, I think 3 wins is realistic. I mean, it's optimistic, but realistic, I think. I don't the game that I'm like kind of penciling in for the loss right now is I don't like Harvey at SunTrust Park. I don't think he's going to pitch very well there. He's become a kind of a fly ball pitcher now. And that place, as we've seen, you know, it is still a young stadium, but it's established itself very early as a hitter's park, for sure. And I'm kind of nervous. And especially because the Braves seem to be hitting the cover off the ball early this year.
That's my concern with this road trip.
Yeah.
You know,
is the pitching.
Yeah, and not that the Mets pitching has been bad, but just that it has not been up to the standard that maybe perhaps we are used to.
Yes. I do think, though, that obviously DeGrom pitched amazing in the most recent game, and Syndergaard is, I think that Syndergaard is starting to find his stride now too. The movement he had in the stuff he had in this most recent start was nasty.
Yes, it
It's the
was.
nastiest he's been this year. The movement was crazy. I remember that one. I don't know if you saw that one, like, really slow gif of like Nito
Yep.
completely just like missing the ball. That was awesome. So I'm hoping that, our pitchers are starting to find their stride. It'll be really interesting when Vargas comes back, what they decide to do.
Yeah, I don't know what that's going to look like at all. And we're probably still at least a week or two away from that. I would say at least a week away from that. So maybe we'll save that for next week's show. But yeah, it should be fun to watch them in Atlanta, maybe rack up a few more wins. What's crazy to me is that just the distance the Mets are putting at the top of the division right now without necessarily having a great, they just had a 500 homestand, and they're still head and shoulders above the rest of the NL East. So this won't last forever, but I enjoy watching it while it does.
Yeah, for sure. And this 4-game series against Atlanta coming up is going to be really important too, because it's the first time we've seen them, and they actually have a better record than the Nats right now.
Right.
So, are they're in second place, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so, if we want to really put the distance between ourselves and the rest of the division, no better time to do it than against the second place team.
Right. And people are gonna say, record doesn't matter at this point in the season. Wins are wins.
Exactly. Wins are wins at any point. Statistically, every game counts the same.
All right, so we got a fun email today. This is from somebody who posts on the site as Flushtown Fandom, and
Ah, yes. I am familiar with him.
he said that he's going to give us a couple of would you rather situations,
Okay,
and
ready.
we have to make a choice here. So, Allison, would you rather have an annual season ticket plan behind home plate or all you can eat Shake Shack? Now, he gives a qualifier here. He says both are immediate transport. You click your heels and boom, you're high behind home plate or sipping on a vanilla shake. But it will affect your waistline, it says. You will have to walk to center field still to get in line to wait to get your Shake Shack, but it's all you can eat. So it's not instant Shake Shack, but it's all you can eat Shake Shack.
And is it for free?
I mean, I believe that's part of the plan, yes. That
Okay.
you get your free ticket or you get your free Shake Shack.
I'm going with season tickets.
Yeah, of course you are. Why wouldn't
I
you?
love, I love, sh and I love Shake Shack.
Oh, you know what? Hang on. Chris just popped online. Let's
Oh,
add him to this call, and then we could ask him the same
yay.
question.
Yes, let's ask him.
This is great radio right here. This is just great, great radio.
Captivating.
Captivating audio. So let's see. Let's see if he's actually online. Oh, the suspense is killing me.
Chris,
Yeah.
you were at the game. I want to hear everything.
Oh, nope. Maybe he's not online. We'll see.
Damn.
We'll see
Damn.
what happens in a minute. But yeah, so we'll keep going. So yeah, I agree. I would think that the season ticket plan will be the better way to go because, first of all, at Citi Field, there's a bevy of food options. And
Oh, yeah, for
if you
sure.
had free all-you-can-eat Shake Shack, you probably wouldn't hit up Blue Smoke. You probably
Yeah, which
wouldn't
is
hit up
sad.
the taco stand. You wouldn't get your Pat LaFriera sandwich. Like, there's so much good food there. You don't want to be just shoehorned into one food choice.
And I am lucky in the sense that here in Baltimore, I do have access to Shake Shack, but I do not have easy access to Citi Field. So the ability to click my heels is really what seals the deal on that for me, is because, like, as someone who doesn't live close by, if I could just click my heels and be at Citi Field, that would be a dream.
I am considerably closer to Citi Field than you are, but I agree with you. It would still
Yeah,
like,
with traffic, it's probably almost the same anyway.
yeah, like just not having to sit on the RFK Bridge
Yeah, for real.
is worth this. All right,
I was
so
like,
let.
what's the RFK? Oh, the Triborough.
Yep, exactly. All right, so would you rather live on the Cespedes Ranch or
Okay.
have the Cespedes car collection?
I'm taking the ranch.
We're in sync tonight. I'm taking the ranch too.
Taking the ranch. I'm not much of a car person. I mean, nice cars are nice to look at, but I don't feel the pull like a lot of people feel of like they really want to drive a super nice car.
I
I
also
want to
feel
drive
like,
a car that gets me from point A to point B and doesn't cost a lot of money to maintain.
yeah, I also feel like the Cespedes car collection are not very practical cars.
No.
Like, could I fit my groceries in some of his cars? Probably not. You know,
No.
so I feel like I would rather have the ranch with his expansive beauty than have an inconvenient car to like get my kids to school.
Yeah, agree. I love the ranch is beautiful. I would love to have that. That'd be great.
Plus, I imagine the barbecue.
Oh yeah. Cespedes family barbecue.
Exactly. Okay. Hold on to your butt for this one. Would you rather do cocaine with Keith Hernandez or play bridge with Ron Darling?
Oh, that's difficult because I want to hang out with both of them.
I know.
Can I just drink booze with both of them? Can I like take a middle cr- No, I'll play bridge with Ron.
Now, I am not, I have never done cocaine in my life. I don't plan on ever doing cocaine, but if you're gonna do cocaine, isn't Keith
Who's a better
Hernandez,
person to
right,
do it with?
the Keith Hernandez, right, isn't he kind of the platonic ideal of a cocaine partner? In addition, I don't know the rules of bridge.
Oh, you do not. I do.
I have never played bridge before, so I think I'd be at an immediate disadvantage. And Ron Darling's such a smart guy, I'd be afraid to appear stupid around him.
For sure.
So I think I might also like put the straw to my nose and blow away the cocaine, but I'm at least pretending to do cocaine with Keith Hernandez.
Yeah, I feel you. I would have to definitely get a rules refresher of bridge, but I have played it in my youth with my grandmother.
Oh, okay. All right,
But I don't really
Chris is now
remember
ready for us.
Oh, yay.
So, we will try to we'll rapid fire the ones we've already done for
Okay.
Chris. Again, thrilling audio.
Hey.
Hey, Chris.
Chris.
Ha
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, we're playing a game of Would You Rather.
Oh, are we doing all of those?
We skipped one of them.
Okay, I think I know which one it was, and question asker. Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All
So
right. Up down.
we're going to rapid fire the ones we already have gone through for
Okay.
you. Would you
Okay.
rather have an annual season ticket plan behind home plate or all you can eat Shake Shack?
Ah, the seats.
Yep, we said the same thing. Would you
I
rather
mean,
live, was that?
you know you can get Shake Shack delivered to you. You have to pay for it. But
Yeah.
if you're in the, yeah.
And we were saying that you would probably avoid the other foods because you have free Shake Shack. And that's a shame because there's so much other good food there.
Yes.
All right. Would you rather live on the Cespedes Ranch or have the Cespedes car collection?
The ranch, and I think the framing of the question included living with him there, so that makes it even better.
Yes.
Forget the cars.
Yeah.
You're answering exactly in line with Allison and myself so far, but this next one split us, so we'll see what you say. Would you rather do cocaine with Keith Hernandez or play
Ha.
bridge with Ron Darling?
Darling.
I said I don't know the rules of bridge, and I'd be afraid to appear stupid, so I would, yeah.
Yeah, no, I have a day job to keep, so darling.
Yeah.
I have a feeling Keith would get you into additional trouble, perhaps, too.
Or
Yeah, I
talk you
wish
out
one
of
of the
it.
options there was like get into a bar fight with both
That's what I
guys.
said. I said, can I drink booze with both of them?
Yeah, that would be the most fun. We should try and get an Amazing Avenue, and what's their charity called? Is it the Gary, Keith, and Ron Fund or something?
I forget. I know that there is a thing.
Yeah, we should try and do an event with them.
Yeah.
Hey,
then,
I'm in.
And then drink them under the table. Show them who the real bosses are. All right. And finally, would you rather the Mets win the World Series with a heavy reliance on veteran players like Gonzalez, Cabrera, Bruce, Lobatone, and Reyes? They had to say Reyes, of course. Or the Mets lose the wildcard game but got their right in strong performances from Rosario, Nimmo, Smith, Conforto, and Plawecki.
The World Series win.
World Series? Obviously.
Yeah, World Series, for sure. Not even a question.
Yo, I'll go on record right now, and you guys know how I feel about Jose Reyes. I'll go on record right now and say that I would accept, like, 5 more years of Jose Reyes if it means we could get a title.
Wow. 5's a lot of years, Allison.
I'm starved. I was not alive in 1986. So I've lived my whole life without a Mets title.
Yeah, I was too young. I was alive, but I was too young to remember or process any of that.
Same.
Yeah, I mean, like, 4. As long as he was only a bench player and, like, not, like kind of what he's doing right now, that I'd accept 5 years. For a World Series. I would sell my soul.
Yeah, I really don't have a problem with production from veteran players right now.
No.
No. I mean, at this point, Cespedes is a veteran player.
Right, yeah. And it's especially because they didn't sell out their young players to get these veteran players. I'd be more upset if they traded Nimmo and Conforto to land a big bat or something. But this team is made up of a fair amount of veteran players with a fair amount of exciting younger players. This is a good mix. So if those younger players have somewhat subpar years, but they still win the World Series, I'm totally fine with that.
I mean, Conforto and Rosario are centerpieces of this team, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chris, real quickly, give us a taste of the ballpark tonight. What was it like?
Oh my God. I'm so jealous.
It was, it was incredible. It was relatively sparsely attended, and that's understandable. It's still cold, not as bad as it was, you know, the previous two nights or some of the other home games they've had so far this year. But, not a knock on anybody, but there weren't that many people in the park. But it felt like everybody who was there was into it, you know? And it went from that first inning, couldn't have gone worse. You know, Matt's isn't sharp, gives up a 3-run home run. You get to the bottom of the first three guys up, just like boom, boom, boom. I think it was 11 pitches that Roark threw. Felt pretty miserable. And baseball is a long game. I wasn't resigned to defeat, but it was just like, man, coming off those two losses, this kind of feels like there's a hill to climb. But the low point for me was when Rosario swung at the 2-0 pitch with the bases loaded when Roark had like completely lost the zone. I couldn't see this from the upper deck, but you know, heard from friends watching at home that Roark was barking at the ump the whole time and all that.
Yes.
And you know, I'd said at the time, I want him to take two pitches. I don't care if he gets the 2-2, because if he strikes out, Conforto still comes up with the bases loaded and a chance to tie or, you know, take the lead. So that was the soul crushing moment for me. And then that eighth inning. Oh, it was so good. I mean, it went very quickly from the start of the inning to the game being tied. And then, you know, when Lagares does what he did, hitting that double down the line, that really felt like something. And then the grand slam was just, you know, I mean, I think there were probably about 30 to 40 people in my entire section, but there were only 5 to 10 within, you know, a few rows of where we were. And, you know, running around, high-fiving people, yelling and all that. I'm a little ashamed that I have a voice right now.
I definitely screamed. I screamed.
Yeah. So it was just that for an early April, mid-April, I guess, We're getting closer to the 20th than the 10th. So mid-April game, you know, that was about as exciting as it gets. And, you know, I want to see just as many stories about how invigorating this inning was for the Mets as I did about the Nationals on Monday night.
Well, that's what we were saying earlier, is like, you know, if you eliminate both innings, it's the exact same series. The Mets win Monday and lose today. It's still, it's the same series. It's neither one is a season-changing experience, but everybody was talking about the first one as if it was the end-all, be-all. This is why the Mets were going to be terrible this year, and people are not going to write the converse of that for this inning at all.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think there will be celebratory stuff. And, you know, apologies for joining in the middle here, but have we talked at all looking forward to what they have ahead of them in the immediate future? Or
it does about Atlanta, that's all.
Oh, okay. Did Freddie Freeman have his wrist hit by a pitch since that? Is that new, or was that a thing?
Wait, what happened? Oh.
That happened?
He got hit on the wrist. I'm just catching up myself. But he was hit on the wrist, and he didn't even wait for the trainers. He just walked off the field and into the clubhouse, which sucks. Yeah, you hate to see a guy hurt, but he's clearly their best player.
Yeah, I'm now like rapidly Googling. But I didn't know that.
That changes this weekend quite a bit.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I just... you know, just got into computer mode here to record. So I was just curious if that had already come up. So
no,
it did not.
So there we go. I think that changes things fairly significantly for the for the next few days.
Yeah, agree. Absolutely.
Can I say I was a little disappointed that Anibal Sanchez got hurt. I would have preferred to face him. Is that bad? I can laugh about wanting a guy to not get injured, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's allowed. I'll allow it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, that's my spiel from tonight, and I will let you continue taking the podcast wherever it was going.
No, we were kind of wrapping up when you came on, so...
Okay, cool.
But nice little guest appearance.
We're kind of the end of it.
Yeah.
Hey, all right. Well, in that case, I'm glad parking was extremely easy when I got home, so I'm glad I got to squeeze in a few minutes here. And try to go to a game like that sometime this year, listeners, if you have a chance. You can't plan for it, but man.
I was talking about this on Slack the other day. I was at a game, gosh, it was at Citi Field, I'm going to say maybe 2013. When Jordani Valdespin hit a walk-off grand slam to end the game. And I've never seen...
I think I was at that one, too.
Oh, where he is before. This is pre-McShane existence for me. And I have never seen, like, more strangers hugging and jumping up and down than in that moment. And it wasn't even that important of a game. But, you know, it just... A walk-off granny is just something you have to appreciate when you see it.
As far as, like, games that ultimately ended up being insignificant that, like, but at the time were awesome that I've attended, the one that sticks out in my mind is R.A. Dickey had, was it a complete game shutout? It was during the Cy Young season. Uh-huh. It was one of the amazing games. He pitched against the Phillies, and he just, like, struck out a million guys. And I just, the distinct memory I have isn't even from the game itself. It's from after the game of, like, all the fans flooding the tunnels and just screaming, "You got dickied!" And clap, 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 just over and over. And it was, like, deafeningly loud. And it was awesome.
Yeah, leaving the game tonight, there was one poor Nationals fan who was trying to answer back with... You know, he wasn't being, like, abrasive or anything. But those of us who are Mets fans are, you know, going down the stairs, "Let's go Mets." And then a guy started, I forget what it was, but, you know, I think it was "if you're happy and you know it," but something, "if the Nationals suck and you know it," right? And then this one poor Nationals fan is trying to be like, well, who won the series? And everybody was just like,
bruh.
Just like loud noise over you. Like, yeah. Nope.
Read the room.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, whenever any Nationals fan ever says, I have a friend who's a big Nationals fan. And whenever he says that to me, like, you know, hey, Nationals won the series. And I'll say, well, it wasn't a playoff series because we all know the Nationals have never won a playoff series. So.
Yeah, that is, there's nothing wrong with using that.
Nope. So, well, Allison, thank you for joining us this week. Chris, thanks for making your cameo appearance.
Ah, at any time.
And, oh, let's do this again. So next time we record, are there seven games on the schedule between now and next Thursday?
No, they're off on Monday.
They're off Monday. So we got four, and then, I guess there'll be, if we record Thursday night, there'll be seven games.
Oh, yeah. The listeners can be in on the logistics here.
Yeah.
I will be in San Diego, so...
Oh!
How exciting!
So, Allison, what are you doing next week?
should be able to do it, I think.
Nice. So, seven games. The Mets are 13-4. What's our prediction for their record as of Thursday night of next week? Chris?
So, I came into this week hoping for 8-4. To get him to 20 wins, you know, in April, which would be really nice. So let's just stick with that. And if I can just do basic math real quick, they need seven more, obviously, after tonight. And that would leave them with, you know, well, if it's just the next week.
Yeah.
So let's say on that pace, I want 5-2.
Allison?
And I'll predict it.
I was going to say the same thing. I want 5-2.
So, Chris, are you saying three from the Braves?
Yeah, and I feel slightly more comfortable with that, with Freeman being, you know, there's no diagnosis or anything yet, but I don't think he's going to play in the series. That helps make me a little more optimistic. And the Cardinals really didn't impress me. I'm actually more afraid of the Braves.
Agreed.
Going into all
I agree too. Yep.
Yeah, 5-2 sounds reasonable. Which will put them at 18 wins going into the weekend.
That'd be so cool.
Yeah, that would be nice. And I will be at Petco at least once, so I won't get to see Bartolo hit a home run, but I hope to see something cool.
To be in that ballpark when Bartolo hit that home run.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, I can only imagine.
A friend of mine did the 7-line outing there, and I will forever be jealous of her for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real. I mean, I think it at least is good that it was, like, a 7-line game, because that means there were a bunch of Mets fans there.
Yeah.
And so that's cool. At least, like, more Mets fans than would have been there ordinarily got to see the historic moment.
What a moment.
Ugh, well,
enjoy San Diego, Chris, and we'll be back next
week. Thank
you. Yep.
Hey, everyone. This is Steve Slipa, and I'm back for our first Minor League Player of the Week segment for 2018. So, the seasons for Las Vegas, Binghamton, St. Lucie, and Columbia started on Thursday the 5th, and they all played a few games before this week, so I'm going to include those games into this week, which technically is the 8th to the 14th. So, first up, look at the standings. The Las Vegas 51s are 3-7, which puts them at the bottom of the PCL Pacific Southern Division. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies are 3-5, and that puts them tied for 3rd in the Eastern League Eastern Division. The St. Lucie Mets are 6-4, and that puts them tied for 4th in the Florida State League South Division. And the Columbia Fireflies are also 6-4, and that puts them tied for 2nd in the South Atlantic League Southern Division. So, our pitcher for the week is St. Lucie Mets right-hander Justin Dunn. He started 2 games this week, and he combined to allow 0 runs over 10 innings, scattering 8 hits, walking 3, and striking out 14. So, really, there's not much to say, because it's only 2 games, but, I mean, So far, so good. You'd rather see a guy do good than a guy do bad. For comparison, in Dunn's first two games last season, he had a 3.86 ERA, which is 4 earned runs in 9.1 innings. And he allowed 11 hits, he walked 7, and he only struck out 2. Again, it's a cliche, only 2 games, so working with a small sample size. But according to Dunn himself, he took a lot of pressure off of himself, and he's throwing better as a result. According to Mark Valdez last year, Dunn is basically trying to be too perfect. He felt the pressure being like a first-round draft pick. He was trying to live up to that hype. And basically, he was going out there every time he went to the mound, trying to throw a perfect game. He's trying to get 81 swings and misses. He's trying to take strike out all 27 batters that he faced. And basically, he took his lumps as a pitcher last year, and maybe that's a good thing. In an interview this year, after his second start last week, he said that he's not putting a lot of pressure on himself anymore. Not in a not caring way, but in a whatever happens, happens, and there's nothing I could really do about it way. He said that he's, quote, not putting pressure on myself. I took all the pressure off with 2 full years of pro ball. I am not in control of a lot of things, so I just have to go out there and pitch and do what I've known how to do since I was a little kid. So, and end quote. So the number's encouraging, obviously. Let's hope that he can keep it up. It's way too early to say that he's gotten over all those past problems that plagued him last season, but again, it's better to see a guy do good than to see a guy do bad. And now for our hitter of the week, and that individual is Las Vegas 51's utility man, Ty Kelly. This past week, he hit 441, 486, 1.029 in 9 games. He logged 15 hits with 2 doubles, 3 triples, and 4 homers. Very symmetrical. Really, I don't know. There's not much to say about Ty Kelly. He's an organizational depth player, and I really can't see many scenarios where he gets promoted to the big leagues. He plays second base, but there's tons of guys ahead of him on the depth chart at the major league level and in the minors. He plays third base, but there's a ton of guys ahead of him on the depth charts at the major league level and in the minors. And he could kind of play left field and to a lesser degree right field. But again, he's blocked because there's a ton of guys ahead of him in the depth chart at the major league level and the minor league level. So, it's better for a guy to do good than not do good, as was the case with Dunn. But Ty Kelly is what he is, and there's really not too much there. But he had a good week, so, you know, kudos to him for that. So, I will be back next week, which will be week 2. For our minor league players of the week.
Hello, this is Aaron York for Mason Avenue Audio, and today I want to talk about the rumors surrounding the Mets' catching situation. As soon as the team lost Travis d'Arnaud and Kevin Plawecki on the same day about a week ago, and although it didn't seem like they lost him on the same day because Kevin Plawecki's x-rays came back negative, on the same day he hurt his hand when we found out that Travis d'Arnaud had a UCL issue and would eventually have to have Tommy John surgery. It looked like Plawecki would just be out for a couple days with a bruise on his hand, but then the MRI shows a hairline fracture and he's going to be out for about a month. And now everyone wants the Mets to trade for a catcher, even though that might not be best for the long-term interest of the team, especially if Plawecki, who a lot of people were bullish on heading into the season, especially if he comes back, has a decent year behind the plate. Before he got hurt, he started to look like the guy that was just hitting ground balls to the left side over and over, so that was not good. Although, towards the end of last season, he was driving the ball in the air more. He has a new open stance, but we don't really know. We don't know if a change is going to happen in the long term with his ability to drive the ball in the air, or if he's just going to be just another catcher who hits the ball on the ground and doesn't give the Mets much on offense. The guy whose name gets brought up pretty much all the time we talk about trades is JT Realmuto, because The Miami Marlins pretty much traded everyone else of value on that team, save for Justin Bour, depending on how you feel about Derek Dietrich. And then now Harlan the Marlin is pitching his butt off with great games against the Mets and the Yankees. So, but obviously, eventually, this team is going to build around some of its young players, and Real Muto could be one of those guys. Depending on how fast they see this rebuild going, he could be someone they try to sign to a long term contract and who they want to stick around, because it's impossible to find a catcher who hits well these days, and Real Muto is one of those rare guys. And when you're trading way before the trade deadline, like the Mets would be doing here, since this proposed trade would mostly just be to cover up for Plawecki being hurt, but it would give the Mets a boost in that department in the long run. But trading in July for Real Muto, because he's under team control, would cost a pretty penny, and the Mets might not have the prospects to match up to some other teams if there is more demand for this guy, which there certainly will be, because teams are going to be, or in July, are going to need more offense, and they are going to, and there just aren't enough catchers that supply that kind of thing. So even if a team's good on offense, a catcher is always going to be a place where they can improve, unless they have one of the few players who can get it done at that position. And yeah, even though there's less teams looking to make that deal at this time of year, that's just going to give the Marlins more leverage over the Mets. So it's just going to be hard for the Mets to make a fair deal at this time of year. Although JT Realmuto could be a stud. He's been worth 7 wins according to Fangraphs over the past 2 seasons, with about 3.5 wins over the last 2 years. He hits for a little bit of power. As he showed in his season debut against the Yankees on Tuesday night, he hit a 3-run home run the other way. It was a little bit of a Yankee Stadium home run, but still, you just like seeing him hit the opposite way with authority. Certainly, that's something that we'd like to see more of Travis d'Arnaud do, but he is out for the season, so that was really sad. But that just reminded me of d'Arnaud, seeing Real Muto go the other way on Tuesday night. And he can do it all. He even runs a little bit. And gets on base, and he just does a little bit of everything that you like to see from a catcher. So he is kind of that complete package that is going to be in demand. And now, is it worth it for the Mets to go after that? With Plawecki out for about a month, that's something that they have to ask themselves, and it really depends on how much faith they have in Plawecki to turn into a guy who can give them a little bit of pop, because right now, the Mets have nothing going on with Jose Lobatone and Tomas Nito. Pretty much the most important or impressive, exciting thing about Lobatone is his bleached boy band hair, which is very exciting. But just his he looks overmatched at the plate right now, and so does Nito, who they called up recently. And Mickey Callaway has not been shy to pinch hit for those guys, which is just giving the Mets a disadvantage, because you also, obviously, in the National League want to pinch hit for the pitcher. Although last night, which was Tuesday night, when Callaway pinch hit for Wheeler with Jose Reyes, it was a kind of a funny situation, because Wheeler now has 2 more hits on the season than Reyes after collecting hits in his first 2 at-bats. Last night, Reyes is still 0-4-18, and that's turning into a whole issue. How long are the Mets going to deal with that, as they have this guy that they sometimes bring off the bench, and he hasn't been able to get a hit? So the whole Reyes thing is going to drive people insane until he either starts playing better or gets released. So that's a situation to monitor, but this catching situation is really important, because the Mets would like to get some offense out of that position. They're already struggling to get offense out of shortstop, although Ahmad Rosario has looked more disciplined in the second week of the season than he was in the first week, when he looked to be swinging everything. He had that really nice at bat the other night where he just fouled off a bunch of pitches, which is great. The only issue is now just him being more selective on pitches and not missing pitches that are in the zone. So he's still got some work to do, but I just think Real Muto is going to be too much. I think the Marlins are going to ask for too much. I think the Marlins are thinking about starting their rebuild with this guy and having him be one of the pieces and signing him to a team-friendly deal that will also help Real Muto not have to deal with arbitration and get a lot of money up front. So I think that's something that the Marlins can do with him that not a lot of people are talking about. But we'll see. We'll see if that is the guy that Derek Jeter... Look, it was a big fire sale. They traded away a lot of guys. They certainly could have traded away Real Muto. They traded away Christian Yelich, who looked like a building block, but they kept Real Muto. Maybe Jeter wants to build around his young catcher. So that will be interesting to see. And it's just going to make him, if the Marlins feel away, it's just going to make him harder to acquire for the Mets. But we shall see as the Mets... try to get rolling again after the euphoria has come down from that amazing start. So let's hope that the catching situation improves on itself and the Mets don't have to be held over a barrel by the Marlins. This is Aaron York for Amazing Avenue.
Folks, that does it for another installment of Amazing Avenue Audio. Thank you so much for listening. We truly appreciate it. Go to AmazingAvenue.com where we have all sorts of great Mets content happening early in the season. We've been doing some really good work. I'm really proud of what our staff's been doing, so check it out. We hope you'll enjoy it as much as we enjoy making it. You can also find Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Amazing Avenue. You can find this show at blogtalkradio.com. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on your podcatcher of choice. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We really appreciate that, and that does help us out quite a bit. Also, please email the show, podcast@amazingavenueaudio.com, and you can follow all of our contributors on Twitter. I am at Brian Needs a Nap. Allison is at Petite PhD. Chris is at Chris McShane. Steve is at Steve Saipa. And Aaron is at Aaron P. York. So next time we talk, the Mets will likely be heading west, and we're going to have, hopefully, a nice couple of games to talk about. So until then, let's go Mets!